thank you once again for organizing this call. Thanks to Mass Water Works for putting this ongoing collaboration together. My name is Martin Suberg. I'm the Commissioner of Massachusetts Department of Environmental Protection. On the phone, listening, is also Kathy Baskin, our Assistant Commissioner for Water. And we have also representatives from each of the regional offices on the line in case there are issues we need to follow up on, and just making sure that we're all operating from the same information base. I also wanted to acknowledge that we have Jane Downing from US EPA. I believe she was going to be able to join us from the drinking water program at US EPA Region 1. And we're looking forward to, her participation in this. The way I think we've been doing this, Jen, and if this still works for the people on the call, I think, first of all, as I understand it, this call is being recorded, and we take these recordings and put them up on the Mass DEP website. You'll see we have a growing section on departmental responses to COVID-19, and we've tried to put these recordings on in case they're useful to people to listen to later on. So that's our plan for this. Secondly, I believe the way you've done this is to have everybody on mute for the beginning, just to make sure that background noises, feedback, other things that arise when you have a lot of people on a conference call doesn't occur. And I believe the way people unmute themselves if they'd like to ask something is to hit *6. And I think what we've been asking is that, if people are going to unmute themselves, they hit *6, say what, ask their issues. And then when you're done, *6 again to mute yourself, just so, again, so everybody can hear. So I want to make sure that we do have time to, get some of those questions. I will say that we've gotten, guidance and questions that I want to go over sort of as a preliminary matter. I want to report back on some of the things that folks asked us last week, previewing some of the answers, which will be up on our website in the next day or so, but to preview some of the more, some of the bigger picture questions that we got. Mass Water Works sent us a letter yesterday. We wanted to provide some preliminary reactions. And then this morning, we also got a few questions. Some of them overlap, so I think we should be able to get through all of them and still have enough time to, get email questions. I believe people are emailing Jen Peterson, get email questions, or, unmute themselves on the line and raise their question or comment. So, unless Jen, there's anything else, I'll plunge right into some of the follow-up work we've done, and just plunge in unless there's any preliminaries you'd like to raise. Okay, hearing none, I'm going to go right ahead then and say, first of all, there were a couple of things that there were a couple of questions that we wanted to get back to folks on, and things we've continued to hear about. First, with regard to the very important issue of safety, we have gotten questions continue to get them, understandably, about safety and personal protective equipment. We've gotten several questions about whether or not there is a program, either through MEBA or other sources to get personal protective equipment if a water department or a wastewater department is running short. As our written answer indicates, unfortunately, at this time, there is not a program. We have continued to identify this as an issue. Obviously, people may have been seeing the extraordinary shortfall in PPE generally, and some of the extraordinary measures that have been taken to get PPE into the hands of medical providers and first responders. As I've indicated, we've identified this as a very high priority for your industry, which is considered an essential service. And we will continue to talk to the command center and see where the opportunities are available. In the meantime, as we suggest in our written answer to this question on our website, if you have a relationship with your local emergency management agency, your local emergency responders who are, I would encourage you to be in touch with them and let them know. That's another avenue. They work closely with MEMA in terms of identifying community needs, and it is another avenue to make sure that your requests are being identified. So for right now, as I said, we'll continue to recognize this is an important issue. And we will do our best to, make sure that we are highlighting this. But like I said, right now, in addition to that information, if you do have a relationship with your local emergency management agency, I encourage you to be in contact with them and talk, identify your needs. We also did get a question very recently about whether or not people in water and wastewater areas could be put on the list for priority testing if they believe they have symptoms. Right now, the way testing works, again, it's medical personnel, ambulance, first responders, some of the more sensitive subpopulations, either based on demographics or underlying medical conditions. But we have taken that question back and sent it to our liaison at the command center. So again, we will continue to try to update information on that. For those of you on the call, this is a drinking water call, but we did get, we do talk and spoke earlier this week with wastewater operators. At that time, we indicated that we would update the answer based on the latest information that we have in terms of exposures to wastewater and what the latest health information is on that. We've updated that question and answer in the wastewater section. Again, what it really underscores is, while it really underscores the need to make sure that people are following best practices in terms of hygiene protocols and personal protective equipment. But like I said, we put an answer out on that in the wastewater section. We got a question about last week about essential services and whether or not people that work in the offices in support of water and wastewater operations, people that are keeping the IT up and running, or people that are responsible for paying bills or functions like that, would also be considered essential services. The answer is we took a look at it, and there are several parts of the essential services order, and it's Exhibit A where we believe that those positions would be included in support of water and wastewater operations in terms of supporting public works. Again, the guidance is if it is possible for people to work at home, that's strongly encouraged, but these functions are identified as essential, including those people that are literally working on the physical plant of water and wastewater. Finally, we got a lot of discussion last time we were together on the issue, and I think it came up in one of the questions we got this morning about hooking up properties. I think one of the questions came, sometimes a property has the water turned off seasonally and turned back on. And I guess some of our water systems are getting requests, from people that may be choosing to come in from other jurisdictions, or for whatever reason, they are looking to have their water turned back on. And we got the question about whether or not there is any requirement that a water supplier do so. And we heard somebody talked about the experience in Maine, which is a different jurisdiction than us. People were asking what our view was. So we spent a lot of time with our general counsel and other other people familiar with the legal authorities that govern drinking water. And what I can say is this: there is no DEP statute or requirement that covers when and how a water supplier interacts with a customer to turn on the water. There again, it's not anything under our authority. So, unless there is a specific local rule, Mass DEP would not be involved in that decision making. I will say the answer might be a little different if you're a private utility governed by the Department of Public Utilities. But for a number of the municipal systems we deal with, there's nothing there that talks about talks anything about the obligation of a water department to turn it on for a particular customer in a particular time period. So, I hope that information is helpful. The lawyers are finishing writing it up. We hope to have that up online, but I wanted to be clear on that. You know, different states may have different obligations, but here that is, at least as far as DEP is concerned, that is a matter between the water department and the customer. So, those were some of the follow-ups, initial follow-ups I wanted to highlight. I will note that the governor, I should have said this at the beginning, as you noticed, and it probably didn't need a whole lot of repetition, the essential services order, now extends through May 4th. And so it applies to the Commonwealth and it applies to how DEP is doing business. So we will continue to be making sure that we are monitoring phone and email. We're going to talk in some of the questions and answers about how submissions can work if you need to be submitting things to us. And so that's how we're going to continue to work through May 4th. Other questions and answers from the last time, and again, I'm just previewing this. We're going to have more detailed material up on the website. I hope in the next day or two, we will give Jen Peterson and our own mailing list a blast email, so you know when it's been formally updated. But we plan to have more guidance on startup procedures, seasonal startup procedures that came up in some of our calls. We are looking at providing additional guidance on exterior spigots, use of exterior spigots for the RTCR. Again, we identified in previous calls that this is a course of last resort, and hopefully we will be able to find other alternatives. But we did, we have been in consultation with a number of entities to see what the best way to do that is, if an entity needs to do that. We are going to also. We've gotten some questions. People asked us whether or not, there's particular guidance for schools. They're worried about elevated lead levels in schools. If a school is closed for a while and lead sampling compliance, we're going to put some guidance up on that. An important question we got is, can we give some time extensions for annual statistical reports, which would be due April 30th. And the program is prepared to extend that deadline to July 1st. We encourage people obviously to file as quickly as possible, but recognizing that we are in unusual circumstances, we are extending that deadline to July 1st. We will be putting up more guidance for the reduced pressure zone backflow device question that we got from last week, including when PWS can shut off the residential fire sprinkler system for purposes of making necessary repairs, and how we read those requirements. We've gotten some questions about how to deliver reports and submissions. And I think that's some of the questions that we're going to get to as part of the discussion here. I will say, generally speaking, We've gotten some questions about whether the mail is being delivered to Mass DEP offices. I understand some people have had the experience that some mail is returned. For a while, when our offices were closed, we had our own issue of figuring where the mail was. A number of our regional directors have now gone to the post office and made arrangements so that we will be able to get the mail and work on it. So if there was something that you submitted and wanted to submit via mail, you can resubmit it. And I'm very hopeful that this time it will go through. In the meantime, we are suggesting that that it is okay to submit things electronically. Specifically, the drinking water program has indicated that water quality reports and other information, if you have access to EDEP, that's one way. The other way is to make submittals via email to program.director-dwp@mass.gov. That's the program director email link that will be up on our website. It will, you know, again, we'll have additional instructions on that. So we're going to have guidance on that. In addition, we will be posting information, the same information and the same contact information for people that are interested in submitting things for the well driller program. So we're trying to make sure that as much of that can be done electronically as possible. So those are some of the issues that we are talking about. We continue to talk about how to get more licensed operators. We have been working in the past week, we and the Department of Public Licensure and our board and MWWA, to identify a path for getting more, if people have had licenses that are recently expired, streamlining the approach for them to get relicensed. We've also been working to make sure that the emergency certification procedures are streamlined. And I might invite Mike Maynard, if you wouldn't mind unmuting yourself, to see if there are any updates you'd like to offer on either the licensing or the emergency certification approach.
Yeah, this is Mike. Thank you, Commissioner. Just a couple things. We had a board meeting on Wednesday. We are also having another board meeting next Tuesday. So we're going to be meeting more frequently, probably once a week, to address the things that you mentioned, the temporary emergency certification and the mailing that is going out for DPL for operators whose licenses have expired. We took a number of votes at the meeting the other day that pertained to the state of emergency, and we're drafting up the meeting minutes now, and we will be posting those shortly. So those are some things that will impact the operators that are out there. But we're working closely with DPL to kind of streamline the temporary emergency certification. So in the event that an operator cannot get on, whose license recently expired, 12/31/19, cannot get online and renew, we're requesting that the systems submit the temporary emergency certification and submit that to drinkingwaterboard@mass.gov with a CC to me. We're working with DPL to log those and to track them. And then once we come up with to streamline the criteria for approval, we will be approving them. DPL will be issuing a letter to the system approving or denying that request. And that's about it.
Okay. Thanks for that, Mike. The last thing, and I think, while you were talking, I was looking on the questions that came in this morning from Mass Waterworks. There are a few, we talked about several of them. We talked about water service turn on and what we understand the legal answer to that is. We got a question about DEP inspections and will DEP be doing sanitary surveys? As you know, we've suspended inspections for all but emergency and important imminent things that either are in response to an emergency or essential to helping make sure that your infrastructure is moving. We're still continuing to work on the, you know, making sure that our approach to resuming inspections is consistent with the guidance we've gotten from the governor, the best public health information, and that we have a good set of protocols in place before we resume. So we will make sure that we are letting you know before we resume the sanitary surveys and with enough time that you know when we'll be back out there. On cross connections, I might ask, you know, whether it's Damon or Yvette, we got a question about two routine tests for reduced backflow preventers shall be conducted within five, you know, how to get two rounds of sampling done. And again, we're going to have more written guidance on this in the next couple of days up on our Q&A page, but I was wondering if the drinking water program might just briefly answer those questions you know, talk about where the flexibility that we're providing is.
Damon, I've unmuted your audio.
Thanks. I didn't know if Yvette wanted to do it or not, but I can certainly talk about where we are now. So our written guidance will point out that, in fact, the two tests in a year for the reduced pressure backflow preventers can be rescheduled. The 5-month separation can also be waived, and the public water system can do that themselves. So if you still want to do two tests in this calendar year, you can push it to much later in the year and get them both done, assuming that we have access back to normal then. But the program is also considering just waiving one of those tests and just make it one test for those devices this year. We're kind of hoping that that would only be implemented in cases where you know there's no problem with that device. So if you have any indication that device is failing, we'd want those devices to be prioritized for testing this year. That's kind of where we're at on that one.
Okay. Thanks, Damon. I might turn briefly now, if I could, you know, again, to the letter that we also received from Mass Waterworks that is a compendium of issues. I think some of these maybe we've covered, but others, I just wanted to go through briefly for our preliminary reaction. We will give Mass Waterworks a written response to all of these, and we're going to put these also in our questions and answers. But it falls into several categories that Mass Waterworks has asked about. The first one is extending the deadline on monthly water compliance reporting beyond the 10th day of the month, and allow the reports to be submitted within 30 days following the last day of the month. Also, Mass DEP should provide guidance on what will be considered appropriate signatures when reports are submitted electronically. So on the second part, and I might ask if EPA is on the phone to speak on the first part, but on the second part, we are again encouraging electronic signatures. You know, scanned signatures would be preferable. We're doing a lot with scanned signatures if you have that capability. If not, we'd like to talk to you about, you know, how electronic submittals could work. So we are very much encouraging people to try to do this electronically. And again, if you can do it in the scanned way, that's great. The 10th day is a federal requirement. You know, again, this might get into some of the work that EPA has been doing with response to COVID. So I might unmute the phone, ask Jane Downing to unmute the phone and see if there's anything she'd like to say about that.
Jane, I've unmuted your audio.
Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Commissioner. Thanks for everybody for doing such great work. I wanted to first give you some feedback on the PPE testing question. We just got off the phone after talking to headquarters, and it looks like they will be trying to work with HHS to see if they can prioritize access for the water operators for both the testing and the PPE. So they're looking into it, similar to the letter that came out of the administrator. We're trying to increase the priority for the operators. And that needs to go to CDC and HHS. So more to come on that one. On the deadline for submitting reports, Yvette and I have already talked through that. We should be able to have an answer very soon. We're trying to figure out if delaying the reporting trips into any state requirements for reporting into CIDWS Fed, but we should be able to come up with an answer for that. And then I just wanted to take a few minutes to reflect upon the OECA memo, because there have been a lot of interpretations in terms of what that meant for enforcement discretion. So if you bear with me, the first thing, and this is a fluid situation, a lot of people have different interpretations, but as of yesterday, what we want to tell you is that the Section E of that memo, which related to drinking water, is a standalone. In other words, if you're trying to figure out what it all means for drinking water, you only go to that section. You do not go to the other sections that had much more flexibility embedded. So if you look at Section E, what is EPA saying? We are setting a very high bar when it comes to drinking water. We expect continued operations as well as required sampling. We will not be changing deadlines, either in regulations or statutes. That's a very long and involved process. In terms of non-compliance, violations will be noted. Now, we are working with headquarters to issue guidance to states as to whether there's a special notation that we can add to these violations as it relates to COVID-19. So if there are instances of non-compliance, we hope there's a way for the system to identify that it's related to the pandemic. In terms of possible federal enforcement action, you all must realize and appreciate that MassDEP is the primary enforcement authority, but we do have the ability at times to step in. We will look at the circumstances of any non-compliance, including whether it's COVID-related. And we'll determine based on the facts whether federal enforcement is appropriate. And it is likely that our determination on federal enforcement action will depend on certain priorities, where acute risks would be the first one we would consider. So there are not a lot of cases where federal enforcement action is necessary. We have very strong proactive states, but we do have the authority to do that. And as I just said, think about that we would look to looking at the full breadth of circumstances, including the pandemic, and we would particularly first focus on acute. And I will also tell you that there is another memo in development in the Office of Water that should give us more clarity on how to prioritize the risks and possible response actions. So I hope that gives you some clarity as we move forward to some of these questions.
Okay, Jane. And you know, as we've been working with the systems, and they've been encountering, and you know, we've talked about this in our conversations, both with the systems and, you know, previewing some of these issues with EPA. Obviously, if systems are, you know, letting us know about the problems, and you know, we're trying to work with them to, you know, get the make sure that they are doing the very best work they can to protect public health, in these difficult circumstances, and they've identified, things that are particular challenges. that information would probably be helpful to EPA's determination when they're looking to see how MassDEP is implementing this program and exercising its enforcement discretion, if that's what it's doing in those cases. That's just a long way of saying that, you know, we've been really encouraging and, you know, these operators have been terrific about reaching out to us with unique situations and trying to problem solve. I assume that's still all to the good, even though it's only a very narrow part of the memo. You know, some of the things they were talking about for those other programs, you know, in terms of documenting what's going on and how, you know, the efforts that the systems took to come into compliance, that's still something that EPA would look at. Okay.
Jane, you're unmuted, sorry. We're getting a little feedback when Jane's unmuted, Jane, are you on the phone as well?
No, I'm on the, on Zoom. Can you hear me?
Yep, go ahead.
So I wanted to reiterate what the commissioner just said, and particularly from the New England experience, the most important thing that you can do is to continue to do what you're doing. Systems working with the state, trying to figure out how to adjust sampling plans. And there's an issue raising that with the state. And then we will, as always, work closely with the systems in the state. So we will continue to work in partnership. We're all in this together.
Jane, if I could, you had said you wouldn't be extending deadlines. And one of the questions I have via email right now relates to CCR. So CCR deadline will not be extended, correct?
That's correct, because in order to do that, we would have to open up the regulation. So then you have to work through what the process is that I just explained, which is it does become a violation. Then hopefully we can code it as COVID-related. Then the state would consider what is an appropriate action. And we would work with the state in general about what kind of action they're taking. And given certain circumstances, we may do something, but it would likely be acute risks first. CCR would not be considered a high priority, I can say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, and you know, again, it's helpful to have Jane on the phone with us, because as we go through this letter, there are many things are implementation, but some are a state overlay, and so I think that's the value of doing that. And so, you know, just walking through your letter, Jen, before we, you know, throw it open to, you know, other questions you're getting via email or on the phone. We did get a question about, you know, in your letter and about, you know, recognizing how hard it is to do total coliform sampling, and the ask of MWWA is request that MassDEP determine compliance based on the minimum number of samples required by the Safe Drinking Water Act, rather than what's on a sampling plan. We should be flexible on the use of alternative sampling locations. That last sentence, we definitely, you know, as we've talked about before, we want to engage with. I think it's, as I understand it, we really need to engage. I don't know that we're necessarily in the position to give a blanket rule, but we do want to talk to systems because, you know, the federal minimum is the same as the state minimum, but the requirement is for the sampling plan to characterize the entire distribution system. And if the minimum is insufficient to do so, then more samples are required. So it's hard for us to, you know, give just sort of a blanket, everybody just do the minimum. We really need to work with the individual systems. And as I've indicated, we're prepared to do so, recognizing that you really are confronting a tough situation. We're seeing this with other programs. It, you know, people are very, you know, the whole issue of getting into residences is going to be a problem that we're going to have to work around. And so we're willing to engage with you. And I guess what we would say, you know, as a preliminary reaction is, let's keep the dialogue going on that. For UCMR testing, I might defer again to Jane here. I believe EPA is aware that, the request of, water systems to see if we can have some flexibility on timing of UCMR testing has been raised. Jane, I don't know if there's anything you'd like to say about that right now.
Well, that's a federal requirement. So you would work directly with us. If anybody is having issues trying to make it happen this year, please contact our office. Jerry Weiss is the point of contact. Again, if you're looking for enforcement discretion, we can't change the deadline, but we would look to the prioritization memo to see where UCMR testing falls on that list. And while we might not take formal enforcement action, we would clearly want to work with you to see how we can get the work done. But we'll have to wait to see where it falls on the list of priorities.
Okay. The next question was, we had a question about what if we can't get the requisite number of lead and copper samples during the crisis. We've already indicated that we're looking to work with you, and we will be coordinating with you as well as with EPA on those sorts of situations. On backflow testing, that mm-hmm. was raised. I think we talked about that with the RPBP testing, and our guidance will be up on the website very soon, I hope. PPE equipment, I tried to cover that in the beginning, and we will do our best to keep working with you on that. Priority testing. For personnel, I covered that right now. We have elevated that, and we'll continue to talk about those issues. The next one is PFAS. You've asked us to suspend its rulemaking. Obviously, our priority right now has been COVID-19 response, and everybody on the call has been very fully working on that. I don't know that I'm prepared to say that we wouldn't do something in 2020 right now, but I will say that it's kind of early for us to make any determination. I think we're all trying to make sure that we are getting through this crisis first. The comment period closed. We are we'll probably have more to say about that in a few weeks' time. But I'm not prepared to say that we would suspend that right now. But I'm also, as you can imagine, we're not finalizing the rule in the next couple of weeks, to be sure. There was also a request to suspend the voluntary sampling. Again, we're recognizing that systems, for PFAS, we're recognizing that systems might otherwise be occupied and understand if they might not want to be taking us up on that. On the other hand, if you do have systems that are interested in pursuing that, and we have a few, we would like, we have the supplemental money, and we would like to continue to, help those systems if it's helpful to them. Again, this is not a mandate. This is we're encouraging people to do it, but we also understand right now during COVID, this is going to be a challenging time. And so, it's entirely in the discretion of the water systems. On the Water Management Act, Mass DEP should suspend orders to complete. We are certainly mindful of this. This was something that got raised very early, and I've been in communication as of Kathy with Dwayne Lavangi of our Water Management Act program. We are going to be flexible. We are not, there are some orders to complete that are out there. you know, if we have a chance to look at them, because, you know, that's, you know, and you know, have some follow-up, we would not be setting any timelines, you know, right now. So that's a long way of saying that, you know, I think, you know, systems are going to get the flexibility they need under orders to complete. Again, I am not aware that we're thinking of issuing any draft Water Management Act permits right now. The question about whether or not, you know, the encouragement of people to wash their hands more and, you know, having more people limit their social interactions and closures of school, whether or not that does anything for our per capita day limits. It's an interesting question that you've raised about whether or not that's going to drive up water usage, and we're going to take a look at that. In terms of grants, deliverables under the Sustainable Water Management Act grant program and the water audit program, I would like to provide flexibility on that, and we will work with you to do that. You've indicated that you'd like us to quickly review and approve staffing plans. Again, we want to work with you on that in light of COVID. That's our priority right now. You know, the sort of the bigger changes to 310 CMR 2211B, you know, we take your point, but right now our mutual effort is to give you as much flexibility as possible during this COVID exercise. So with that, the last one, but we talked about licensing and temporary certification, revenue loss. As I understand, you know, typically things that you're asking for here, you know, financial assistance to fund basic operational needs. You know, in non-emergency situations, that is not SRF eligible. In emergency situations, it is. We have just started to highlight this request with the Clean Water Trust, and we will have more hopefully to talk about that. You know, again, part of the issue is, you know, does the system need it now, or is it more likely that the system will need it later when perhaps, you know, the emergency declaration is over? And so we want to make sure that we're you know, mindful of how the rules work on that. So with that, I think I've tried to go through in a first pass the questions that have come in, as well as some of the issues raised on your letter. And now I'd like to, you know, throw it open to questions that maybe some of this discussion has generated, you know, that have either come in by email or otherwise.
Great. Thank you very much. And we do appreciate your response to the letter. I didn't expect it that quickly, but thank you for going through and addressing some of that. I think it might be important for the folks on the phone to know that the governor signed the bill that dealt with a lot of the challenges faced by municipalities today. And so just for those on the phone, this legislation, and I'll send an email out later, does prohibit a city or town from terminating an essential service. So water is part of that. I know that's been an issue for some of the water utilities that they've been grappling with. So it appears as of now with the state of emergency that you can't be shutting water off through June 30th. And then it also does give the exempts the cap on hours for retired people, which is something that you had brought up in one of the earlier calls, Commissioner. So that has now been signed. So those are some positive things. So I'll send an email out to folks later with the details on that. So in terms of questions that we have in via email, the issue of the monthly reports, you addressed that in terms of sending the electronic copy to program.director-dwp@mass.gov. Are they also to be mailed in hard copy to the regions, or does the electronic alone suffice?
I think, and if I'm getting this wrong, you know, Yvette, Damon, whoever, you know, correct me. I think, you know, sending in it electronically is the first order of business. If you have a hard copy, you know, and can send it in, when you're able to do it. In other words, you know, it's not a requirement that it be done at the same time, but if you're able to get to it, is that how the program would prefer to implement this, so that we can track it I thought that's what I read, but if I'm misreading it, this is a good chance to correct me here, so.
Yeah, this is Damon. That's accurate, Marty. We do need the hard copy officially for our records and for public record requests. But, you know, I think what we've been saying is that if you've emailed it to us now, you've met your requirement to tell us about things within certain timelines. And just mail it to us, you know, hopefully as soon as you can. We'd ask that you indicate in the mail that you already submitted this electronically. Just helps us processing the mail because we are still getting that.
And Damon, didn't the guidance earlier also say that when you send the email to the program director, you should note your region and the program for which you're submitting the report?
Yeah, that's really helpful. So that the Boston staff is who checks that email address, and we just have to, you know, get it to the right office. So it helps us if it's just in the subject line.
Okay. Next question. Has DEP been in discussions yet with other state agencies in regards to the labor unions stopping work and the impact that may have on ongoing drinking water projects? We've been notified today by several trade unions that they'll be shutting down work beginning Monday.
No, we have not had that discussion yet. You know, this is it's been evolving pretty quickly, but no, we have not had a discussion with anybody yet on that. And and I will make it a note to see what other agencies are saying about that.
Okay. The next question relates to financial aspect of utilities. This utility, I've seen a drastic drop in revenue since the start of this pandemic. Has there been any conversation on the possibility of an FY20 deficit due to revenue projections not meeting expectations? I've seen some guidance for the FY21 budget being passed, but nothing for FY20 and dealing with shortfalls. Within that guidance, there was direction for deficit spending for COVID-related costs, but not regular operating costs due to people not paying their bills.
Yeah, you're right. The one area we touched on was tracking costs related to responding to it. This second issue, though, it's very timely. We are getting, and I will raise that up with others when we're talking. You know, that you're raising a separate issue here that's an important one. What happens as a result of, you know, if a utility is experiencing lost revenue? I don't have an answer for that today, but I will follow up on that.
Okay. There are some things that have come through the chat, which are somewhat more informational. One person wants to know that MEMA reached out to the fire department today requesting specifically what PPE our water and sewer department needs. So maybe that's progress there on the PPE issue.
That's terrific.
Kathy Baskin does want to note that regarding mail, it's more difficult for us to track down FedEx, UPS, DSL. So you do get the U.S. Post mail.
Okay.
Yvette wants to just expound upon what Mike Maynard mentioned, which is there is a DPL training on April 10th for certified operators whose licensed have expired. So as the commissioner said, DPL will be hosting sort of a webinar approach to help people get those licenses reactivated. If you need any more information on that, you can send me an email and I can send you the specifics for that. And I think DPL is reaching out to all of those operators with a letter, a mailing, an actual mailing, letting them know that opportunity. I think that is it for the questions that have come in. Most others have been answered.
Can I raise one more thing that I meant to do? And we might have started talking about it last time, but and this will go in our written guidance as well. But you know, people sometimes ask, you know, when about how's the SRF working? Will there be adjustments to the timelines? The trust has weighed in, and it says, the comment period, for, you know, the, the I'm just looking here, you know, we've found a way to, you know, keep our IUP list moving. But the Clean Water Trust also did note that MassDEP and the Clean Water Trust have extended the deadline to qualify for additional subsidy for eligible borrowers for the 2019 plan for both the Clean Water and Drinking Water State Revolving Funds. Additional subsidies will be dispersed over construction contracts that are executed by August 14th, 2020. This is a 45-day extension and may be reassessed and may further be extended if so required. The Trust and MassDEP remain committed to working with borrowers. Furthermore, local authorization for the 2020 intended use plan. Final IUPs, when published, will state that to be considered, communities must have appropriated necessary local project funds or have committed to a schedule to obtain those funds by October 16th, 2020. So we're giving additional time for the local authorization as well. And like I said, this will be up on our website, but I did want to highlight that we're bumping out the SRF deadlines in response to COVID, and the Trust has indicated that, you know, we're willing to reassess depending on what happens in the next month, the next 2 months.
The only other thing that I noticed maybe we didn't cover so much, which was on the list, is the governor's construction guidance. Just in terms of the governor's deemed it essential, but many of the utilities have, cut back on what they deem to be non-essential work. And so these are maybe just more statements about the difficulty that is having for water systems who've sort of restricted their, what they believe is non-essential work. And then just a point about soap being near hydrant poses a potential concern for cross connection. So that's something that if the governor maybe doing anything about that guidance, taking that piece out.
Yeah, I tried to, you know, I know there is a guidance page, and I didn't look to see where the most helpful elements on. I didn't get all the way through it. So I'll make that one of our things to take a look at and see if we can offer anything. I wasn't sure if that question, in terms of the other non-essential services, as I've indicated, you know, with regards to turning water on for residences, you know, again, that's not going to be a DEP enforced requirement. That would be other authorities. You know, that's not any of the authority we're operating under. And again, I realize the answer might be different if you're regulated by DPU versus, if you're a system that isn't. So, that's the most up-to-date guidance I have on that right now.
Great. And so just getting a couple more emails, but the regional offices are still closed, correct? So there is no way to hand deliver reports. You haven't set up some sort of exterior Dropbox at those regional offices?
No, you're right. They're still closed. So if people, either put it in the mail or submit electronically. I know people are, there have been a few questions about, you know, what does submit electronically mean? And we have been trying to encourage PDF signatures as an acceptable means. And if you don't have the ability to do a PDF, I would encourage you to talk to the regional office to see what we can line up. But the in-person drop-off is still problematic. You know, we're being encouraged to, really limit our access. You know, access to our offices are being, pretty tightly controlled to make sure that we in state government are living up to the social distancing requirements. We do have people going in from time to time to get the mail, distribute the mails, figure out a way to get the mail into the hands of people who need it. Get files that we need so that we can continue to work on issues. But I would say the best path is still, if it's going to be a hard copy delivery, I'm pretty sure now that we have an arrangement with our post offices that, just drop it first class mail. And if you can do it electronically, we're really encouraging that right now.
All right, great. So that's all the questions I have via email in the chat.
Is I guess, you know, we can, let's ask if anybody wants to unmute themselves and ask anything. I think we still have a little time, don't we?
We have about 3 minutes, yep.
Great.
Yes, this is Mike Knox.
Hi. Go ahead, Mike.
My question is on the WAN, Mass WAN effort. This past week, Mass WAN sent a poll out to its members asking those operators if they would be interested in filling staffing shortages for their neighbors if requested. Again, the response was roughly, we had roughly 36 responses, and out of the 36, we had 20 operators that responded yes, that they would consider assisting their neighbors. To that end, is DEP considering any effort in reaching out to operators and asking that same question? And I ask that because the WAN network does not reach all of Mass operators or utilities. Again, it could be serious enough as we move forward that there are going to be staffing shortages and the need to fill those positions.
That's a really. I'm sorry. I'll go first, and then it sounded like it was it Kathy or Damon. If that could be viewed as helpful, we would obviously like to we'll push that out to we'll push that out to our mailing list and see what kind of response we get and share that with you.
Commissioner, this is Kathy. Just wanted to let you know we have a draft survey prepared for your review, but I didn't want to send it to you before this call, but it's ready.
I'm going to look at it in a big hurry so we can push that out. That's a really good suggestion.
I did just have one other email in. So in addition to concerns about unions walking off, at least one contractor who has non-union staff has expressed concern about getting access to supplies, pumps, chemical pumps, pipe, rebar, gravel. Is supply chain on DEP's radar?
Well, you know, it is important for us to keep talking about, as you recall on our first call, you know, we raised the issue of are people running out of chemicals. I don't think from anything I've heard from our folks so far that we've heard from particular systems with particular issues, but I will make it a point to, you know, raise to our person at the command center and at, you know, this question of, are we hearing things about the supply chain for construction projects? I haven't personally heard that. And I don't think we've heard that at the drinking water program, but we will ask.
So a couple more questions in through chat. Do we need to list operators that are not current staff as an emergency backup operator, or will it be assumed it is approved if they are properly licensed?
Mike, is that a question you might be able to take? Or is that more of a program question? So these are, let me make sure I understand the question, what you're reading. These are people that are working at the facility, they're licensed, and but they're not listed as the primary operator. Is that the scenario?
It seems like it may follow up on Mike Knox's question that if, you know, another operator was asked to step in and help, you know, if perhaps they're working for a neighboring town.
I see. But they're licensed. Yeah.
But they are properly licensed. Correct. Yeah.
This is okay. Nick Hardy. I can take that one.
Great.
So this is really, I see this as a great planning effort, and definitely getting these things set up is a good idea. You would be asked to notify the Mass DEP regional office if that individual starts assuming operational activities, just because we typically might need to know who's operating in case we need to contact them. So that's what I'm thinking of is, you know, as it stands now, if they're just a backup, no need to let us know, but if they actually assume operational duties, then yes, let us know.
Okay, and then one more, Damon, maybe. So this is, we are a seasonal community. Our pumping level is consistent with winter pumping. Can we continue to sample at our winter sampling level because of access issues and protection of the staff? This would be for the month of April, since our plan is to install sampling taps to remove the access issue.
Yeah, so I know that question is percolating its way up through the program. I think we are working with those systems on a one-on-one basis out of our Lakeville office, for example. So I don't know if I have a broad answer yet on that one, but continue to work with your regional office and we'll get a broader answer written.
Okay. That is all that I have in through email and through the chat. The next call is scheduled for Tuesday at 2 p.m. Is that still the plan, Commissioner?
Yes, it is. And thanks, everybody, for the flexibility for moving this to Friday. I realize, it'll be a shorter gap between, but we'll try to keep this Tuesday time. And, you know, frankly, the way things are moving, it's probably just as well to stay in touch regularly. So if that works for you and for people on the call, that certainly works for us. And we're just planning to keep Tuesdays at 2 p.m., you know, as this time until further notice.
Yeah, and I was going to send out the last email after this call, because since the number changed, I didn't want anyone to get confused before this call.
I will do the same. We did have someone else on mute for a question.
Commissioner Suberg, it's Paul Anderson from Brewster. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
I wanted to thank you for setting up these phone calls. Also, I've recently had customers, I know there's a lot in Barnstable County in general, that are concerned about the safety of their water with the pandemic. Would it be possible for the governor, lieutenant governor, to address that publicly and let folks know that there's no reason to believe that their municipal water is unsafe?
Yeah, we will take the information that we have. It certainly, I think we have an answer up on our Q&A, and I'll go double check and make sure that we do. And we'll I'll note this request. I'll note this request to folks on high, in the command center, but we'll do our best to make sure everybody knows the questions and answers that we've produced. And I think, like I said, I think we have one on our current Q&A, it relies on the latest information from the EPA and the World Health Organization with respect to that. So we're already publicizing that, but I will, I'll talk to our liaison at the command center.
That'd be great. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
And you, as you said, there are resources out there. We have some on our website. You have some on yours. CDC has info on the safety of water and coronavirus. And so any utility could link the CDC info to their website and social media.
Right.
All right, if there are no further questions, I think we're all set.
Okay, and once again, I always say this, and I would be remiss if I didn't say thank you very much for everything you're doing. And again, we're very grateful to have the opportunity to communicate with you, and we are eager to keep the lines of communication going. So thank you once again for everything you're doing in these extraordinary times, and let us know how we can help.
Great. Until next Tuesday. Thanks, Commissioner.
Thank you. Bye-bye.